production in Brazil to expand into the home for the public interest.
Rather than in terms of what that art or that craft.
But you're not suggesting it's necessary to see the same plays over and over again, merely that it is necessary to go often?
What I'm suggesting is that where there is no procedure to help the audience to gain a greater knowledge of the theater than it possesses simply from going to a play, it is advisable not to see the same play over again, because they might not get very much from seeing the same play. They'd simply often be more bored than they were the first time. But from seeing different productions of the same play, and thus beginning to perceive what these same words are capable of, what a characterization is capable of, because often the first time you see a play, it seems quite all right, you see, or not, as the case may be. When you see it in a different performance, you then realize either that you didn't really see the play, or that you saw a very great performance and were not aware that it was great, or else that you saw a poor performance and yet you thought it was perfectly satisfactory because you had nothing to judge it
by. So you're seeing the same play differently interpreted.
That's right.
I wish I had some Elvis Presley records to listen to when I'm feeling late 50s. The mood is turquoise and pink, like being in a sparkling formica kitchen or backyard bomb shelter. My brain feels freeform between prosperity and depression. Wanna watch I Love Lucy reruns, buy a pair of loafers, drive a push-button shift.
Because it pulls gentle enough to call you master, strong enough to call you fool. Because it lives like a desperate trained falcon in the high, sweet air. You can always haul it down to tame it in your drawer. A kite is a contract of glory that must be made with the sun. So you make friends with the field, the river, and the wind. Then you pray the whole cold night before, under the traveling cordless moon, to make you worthy and lyric and pure.
I would buy your argument. Wouldn't you rather see? Sure, I would like to see 10 attempts, but the expense would drive these people into the... But I think that they've got color work. You know that I watched a... As a matter of fact, I'm slightly contradicting myself. I did watch something last November on the National Gallery. NBC did a special on it. And I think the producer was Lou Hazen, I believe, or Hazen. I mean, he's done several of these things. And I have a great fondness for the National Gallery because I think it's marvelously designed and so forth.
But Charles, are you art-oriented?
No.
I mean, is that
one
of your interests?
No, not
primarily.
No.
Because I had picked that up because the special seemed like most of that one about the prophets, which was also an art-oriented thing.
There was still another one in the Prado. I believe there was a special in the Prado. Well, no. I know what I like and so forth.
Yeah.
I No, I enjoy going to a gallery. I think the National Gallery is a marvelous gallery. And I like the way it's lit. And the way they use natural light in it. And we watched this show in the National Gallery last November. Now, the National Gallery has got quite a collection of impressionists and so forth. And the producer of the show got the idea, and I don't know where, but he really wasn't happy to sort of take you through the gallery and show you what it was like. But he imported, or he dug up, a crew of actors, and they all had sort of the thick Anglo-French accents. And they were portraying off stage the various artists, Monet, Manet, and so forth and so on. Well, it was terrible. And it was embarrassing. You would be looking at paintings by Monet, and all of a sudden somebody from somewhere started saying, "My name is, and I did this," and so forth. They schlocked it up. So I think it's they don't have to. They tend to get impressed by the need of a gimmick or a shtick or what have you. They feel that to sell biscuits or tires, you've got to get something to hook the people. And this is where it runs off the track. I think the networks have, where the hell are those 1,500? What do they know?
iTunes up or I think low or down.
Oh, well, okay,
off.
Yeah. And it is a pity. Well, Coach McGlewin says, well, forget. Because of the way it works and the economics of it,
this is the song that you sent me, Will Kenneth, in fact, it was Dream Lover with the Paris Sisters.
Every night I hope and pray the Dream Lover will come my way. I'll put a hope.
Decision, and let us make it as inconsequential as possible. Let's say you want to decide between going out with a friend or staying home and reading a book. Let us say those are the two choices. We'll make it easy. the way to decide using honor as a method of decision making is to ask yourself, which honors me more? Will I be able to be more who I really am? Will I feel more me if I stay home tonight and read, or if I go out tonight and play? Which is actually where I am now? When you stop to honor yourself, you come right into the moment. When you stop to honor yourself, you do not base your decisions on needing approval. You do not base your decisions on looking good. And you also don't base your decisions on avoiding your feelings. Is this confusing to you?
After the Revolution, excerpts from An Endless Poem. After the Revolution, Everything Will Be Far Out, OK, USDA Grade A, Sweet Smelling, and Unreal. After the Revolution, Sparrows Will Sing All the Time, The Azaleas Will Always Be in Bloom, and We Will Leap from Star to Star. After the Revolution, I Will At Wish Be Able to Slip into Fancy Shoes and Dancing Laugh Away My Blues. After the Revolution, Every Day Will Be Christmas, and We'll All Dress in our finest Mao jackets to visit our celestial friends. After the Revolution, contradiction will not be regarded as such. Everything will be swinging between itself and its opposite, constantly transforming into its own negation and back again. After the Revolution, there'll be no after the Revolution, because the Revolution will be happening all the time. And since there'll be no need for memory and oppression, videotape will be recycled back into coal and buried deep in the clean earth. There will be no books after the Revolution. Everybody will already know everything, and in any case, they'll be too busy chanting the complete works of William Blake, which will come to them immediate through inspiration. Kit Smart will be our state poet after the Revolution. He will have returned from his stay in Beulah, where he will have been successful in educating Baraka out of the evil of his anti-Semitism. After the Revolution, Toni Morrison will read the news, and when she feels like it, she'll write it too. Jack Hirschman will do the weather. He knows which way the wind blows. After the Revolution, I'll finish my poem about Aretha. After the Revolution, the aged will once again, respected, rock gently on lawn swings in the summer evenings of their lives, and may your life be long will be a blessing, not a curse. After the Revolution, the rich will live no longer in fear of murder. They will all have been shot, their stocks and their bodies left for carrion. After the Revolution, the blanched skulls of realtors will mark the routes once taken by the demolished freeways, no pathway more than three people wide. After the Revolution, I will return to my lovers on distant planets. After the Revolution, there will be no irony.
So these are huge outfits. Unaccountable, absolutist in character. If power can be transmitted into their hands, then the residues of the democratic system become more and more meaningless.
The jacuzzi is a small pool 7 to 8 feet in diameter, with jets of water and air to produce a massaging effect while people sit inside on benches. The water is heated to around 100 or 105 degrees. Some like it hotter. But heat can cause problems for those who suffer from hardening of the arteries because it tends to expand blood vessels and break off plaque that's been hanging in them, which causes blockages down the line in the brain or the heart. Heat increases the effect of alcohol through the same expansion of vessels, and drunks are known to pass out and drown in jacuzzis. Sexual activity tends to bring infections if chlorine is not properly maintained. It's a warm, moist area.
And you know, there's a very delightful old man that you know, a wondrous, kind and gentle soul, who's always there for you, always there to love. He's old and wrinkled, stooped with age, and there's an old woman, a very special and dear old woman. You know them both. And it would be great fun to let the child and the adolescent meet them as well. And as you think the thought with us, coming forth around the edge of the pond, an old man walks, leaning heavy upon his walking stick, cut of birch, with his flowing robes dragging across the grasses.
What can I ask you? What interests you in them?
Making a shush sound.
I'd like to see
as he moves. His body is stooped.
For me, Kenneth Anger is by far the most interesting American.
And each step is deliberate.
In any category. I mean,
but his face is filled with love.
When people talk about underground films,
and
which
light,
I think has any meaning or any
joy
at all, it's just a journalist label. They're just films, and different people making films in different places. And
you feel your heart
so
go out to him.
I think it's insulting.
And he feels your heart
say, well, he's the
go
best
out
of
to
underground
him.
Filmmakers. In America, I think he's just the best.
And he stands just a little straighter.
Alive.
And smiles just a little more.
Beside you. I don't know, maybe the...
As he felt your love.
Better than you. I don't know about that, but...
As he knows you love him.
In America?
Yeah.
Well, there's not much competition.
Just as you know.
I think it's such a good...
this old man loves you.
So then if... it's just what has happened to Kenneth's films in the last year or two is that one film
it's crossed by nine northern
has been seen by a lot of people, Scorpio Rising, whereas there are a number of other films.
Besides, I think
three other films a number of times. Fireworks, Waterworks, if I can call it that, Yaffe Feast.
And now let's go back into
the
inauguration of the
Pleasure Dome.
A boil
and then he was just telling me before that there's a part of film, the KKK thing, and I know that he started other things like Story of O and several other things that he
Maldoror.
And Maldoror, which
Terrorist Tragedy,
are two films that I think very much need to be made, and probably he's the only person in the world who could make, except maybe Buñuel if he was 30 years younger, which he isn't, or 30 years ago, which he can't ever be.
Can I ask you a sort of over-serious question? That is, when you see the films, which are, seem to be quite different, do you see them in any particular unified way, or do you just see them as just one film, you know, four complete films?
Well, I think...
Actually, you see what I'm driving, I'm just basically saying...
Is there some common thread or...
No, I don't mean to ask, you know, give you a thing to answer. I just like that, you know, like the riddle. But is there something that interests you throughout these films as opposed to, you know, one or two of them, let's say?
Yeah, I think I'd be interested in anything that that Kanzanga did, and I think that there are things that go from film to film, although I think for an artist, those are the less interesting things, the things that are alike from one piece of work to I mean, if I can also just speak out of my own experience, when I write something, I know that what interests me is the way it's different from the last thing I did or from anything else I did, and I get very annoyed when I feel that it's the same, or people point out the ways in which it's the same, although I know leader, it doesn't matter. Well, I know that that's true also. So it's a little embarrassing in front of the person who made the things to say that there are the common things, because I'm sure that, as I say, the differentiating things are what's interesting and important and useful to him. But there's a certain kind of energy in his work that I don't see in most films.
We have four in this country, right?
Certain
how many time zones?
Yeah.
43.
Four in this country, right?
Yes, sir. Four. 43. Yes, sir.
His work is always on something, yes, very close to something.
Four time zones.
Kind of
yeah.
White heat.
We have four in this country, right?
It's the kind of energy that I particularly like, as well.
And
you know how many time zones they have?
Yes, sir. Four. No, sir. I never really studied that.
He's interested in
11.
Extreme situations.
11.
Which
it's not
seem
even
to
funny.
Be the most
11.
11.
The thing that most people
11.
Are interested in now, because
11.
It's a very extreme
well,
time.
We can do. We can
and
go
it seems
anywhere.
As if anything that isn't about it seems to be at this time.
Not only the right of free travel, I'm saying 11.
11. 43. Yes, sir.
11.
11.
That's how big we are.
Theory about why do we see upside down and turn things right side up. Now, if there's any gravitational cause for this flipping the image, then it would be possible or imaginable that in a weightless state we would see upside down and keep it upside down. But the Stratton glasses were invented to enable us to, when put on, they turn the world upside down again. Now, it takes a while to having put them on and seeing the world upside down again. It takes a while before you turn it right side up. It takes several hours. Then if you take the glasses off, the world goes upside down again and stays that way for several hours. Nobody knows why people do this. And it's very strange. I've often wondered whether weightlessness would in any way affect this. Now, in the Eskimo world, for example, there is no upside down. You know, small children don't see pictures right side up or upside down. It doesn't matter which way you hold it to a small child, say a 2 or 3 year old. It's the same. It's only later that this habit of right side upness begins. Now, why? I don't know, and nobody knows. But in the Eskimo world, there is no attempt made to turn pictures right side up. They stick them on their igloos and so on, in any position at all. And they're always amazed when visitors come and start craning their necks around to see these pictures. they think it's very amusing because they don't see any other, they don't have any upside down. When they're drawing a picture, they're just as happy drawing underneath the table. When they come to the edge of the table, they go under and draw up without seeing as freely as when they see. They don't need eyes in order to draw. And they don't think of drawing as for the eyes. But this habit of sensory orientation, by which we think of space as a fixed container, has had an enormous effect upon our ideas of the medium as containing a program.
Before you go ahead on that, may I just ask you, by the way, if the Eskimos do not consider drawings to be or drawing to be for the eye, what do they consider it?
Oh, tactility has great priority over sight in their world.
Is it more nearly a form of sculpture then than
yeah.
is drawing?
And as you know, in contemporary poetry and art, the priority of the sculptural or the tactile has replaced the visual order. The scandal of the cubism or the scandal of much symbolist art was the scrapping of visual space, the throwing aside of the visual in favor of the odile tactile. Of course, at the same time, quantum mechanics was discovering that the physical or chemical bond was resonance, that there is no connection in matter. That is perhaps another way of coming to this medium and the message thing. In visual space, we think of things as continuous and connected. Eh? There is no connection in auditory space or tactile space. To the sense of touch, there are no connections. There are only resonances, beats, rhythms, closures. And to smell, to all the other senses, kinetic movement and so on, there is no continuity, no connection, only discontinuity. And this idea of the visual man, the Euclidean man, that space is continuous and uniform and connected, does not apply in the electronic age to any of the senses except sight. And under electronic conditions, even the visual has lost that continuous character. Under especially television conditions, it becomes once more a mosaic, a collage of resonant dots, spots.
Are you, Professor McLuhan, seeking to approximate that in any way when in your book or your books you have the chapters readable in any sequence, so they don't have to be read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and so on?
That, in this particular book, The Cliché d'Archétype, was the result of having simply created a file of chapters alphabetically and having noticed that they had a kind of dynamic pattern or logic from the absurd to theater. The first chapter was absurd and the last chapter was theater. And it seemed that the intervening order was also a dynamic one. This is the way the book had grown.
The autonomous Komi Republic, which is part of the Russian Federation, is situated in the far northwest of Europe and spreads up to the Arctic part of the Ural Mountains.
Heart of the country where the holy people grow. Heart of the
And,
you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
And about power.
You mean?
We got so much power now.
You know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
We got so much power now. That's ridiculous.
You mean? You know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
Power and all that. That's power. We got so much power. That's ridiculous.
We have
power, 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 power now. It's ridiculous. We got so much power now.
You know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
It's not even funny.
You mean?
That's ridiculous.
You know how many...
It's not even funny.
Cerise, according to a most indelible source who lives near Hugh, is out of it. True. Cerise is definitely out. About as out as out's the opposite of in. Don't ask me why. Doesn't make any more sense to me than it does to you. To see Cerise sitting, silly, sad, moping, melancholy, mad, here in the deepest of dumps. Come, come, Cerise. What do you think Pink'll think? And if Fuchsia could see you fussing so, and oh, what Gray would say. No, I'm sorry, Cerise. With your talent for tinging, you should be ashamed. Every shade of you should. Now you get up and get out and start tinging, or I'll call the police. Did you hear me, Cerise? The police. Cerise? Did you hear me? If there's an absolute white, and there is, and if there's an absolute black, and there is, then it follows that there must be an absolute gray, and there is. Absolute gray is the perfect gray. That's the same distance from absolute white as it is from absolute black. Not white gray or black gray, but absolutely perfect gray. The grayest gray that gray can be gray. And it's around this gray that all the good grays are. The kind of grays that know what's up, that know what's down, that know how far out to get, or how deep in. Absolute gray and all the good grays. always know just what to say. Because they're so close to absolutely perfect gray.
You can look out across the pond into the future. And there on the other side is a ball of light that is your future. Not fully defined yet. And that future can be anything you want it to be. Form it in the light. See the future you. Older. Totally happy. Having experienced all kinds of wonderful successes. And even though that future is on the other side of the pond, it can love you. And you can love your future. See it in the light, beautiful. See it in the light, successful. Make it more dense. Make it more solid. Make it real. Make it real. And it's easy. The more you know it's an illusion, the easier it is to make real. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be. And the old woman walks round the pond one way, and the old man walks round it the other. And they join your future. And the future you knows them too. That's what you're going toward. That's what is creating now. Let it be. And you can gently take a deep breath. And as you do so, you find yourself back in the room, gently, quietly, easily back in the room, hearing the sound of our voice once again. Thank you.
The worst tomatoes in L.A., and your buns are too flat, and if you don't give Jeff what he needs, he's going to find somebody else, okay?
Again, all this is presumption now. It's apparent that the police believe it.
Well,
and
it's
that
not great.
Cowling's car, and that Simpson is in the driver's seat. We've received a report of a gun in the car. The car is heading north, which would be toward Los Angeles. We picked it up in Orange County. The vehicle is registered to Al Cowling, a former teammate, close friend of O.J. Simpson's, who has been a fugitive from justice now almost 12 hours. The car is not exceeding the speed limit, and the police are not forcing it and are not pulling it over. You see them all trailing it. It's a California highway.
We watch on live television O.J. Simpson negotiating with a police dispatcher, being followed down a closed freeway by nine.
You to stand by and monitor the situation at the ground level. Captain Ron will continue to rely on your eye on the sky, in the sky with Newscopter 7. Linda Breakstone is coming online from Parker Center.
It's dangerous. The command set.
That's the complete wrong attitude. You've got to use your body or you lose it.
yesterday's. War, fuck, war, fuck, war, fuck.
Now that can be known about the theater and especially about acting, which previously could not be known, nor could it be understood, because we didn't have enough understanding of how a human being worked generally. And therefore, until modern, you want to call it science or theory or approach of psychology and so on, came into practice, we really could not understand why the actor had these problems which he seemed to have. And therefore, we always had to interpret it as being either due to the actor's temperament, you know, the actor, the nutty being to begin with. When something comes down from heaven, we call it inspiration, and then he acts. And when the inspiration is not there, well, then the best thing he can do is to learn speech.
And so we just hit upon the idea of retaining it as a pattern of growth. This, the idea of pattern recognition, one of the peculiar new awarenesses of our time, is the result of speed up. When things move very quickly, the pattern of form of them appears very plainly. Whereas when things move very slowly, it's not so easy to see a pattern. This has something to do with a lot of the confusions of our world. When people who had previously been quite content in a fixed position, in a job or a career, are suddenly confronted with very fast-moving situations where they can see overall patterns, they suddenly become very discontented with their place, their fixed position. So the dropout is a normal kind of response to pattern recognition.
This is the global village that you...
No, but I mean, in all aspects of our society, the people who are dropping out right, left, and center are people who suddenly have seen a pattern in their lives.
She wanna know about education? I'll tell you about motherfucking education. You know what I'm saying? Yo, I'm from Chicago. I'm not from Tulsa. You know what I'm saying? I'm from Chicago. Streets are very hard. Where you from? What you got?
San Francisco.
I don't know about that, but Chicago is hard than a motherfucker. Let me tell you something. Oh, girl, want to know about education? How about getting your ass kicked for 6 blocks to get to school to learn something? And the teachers don't give a shit if you pass or not.
Meat is good, and if you don't like America, go live in Russia.
He doesn't have anything more to say. That's good, good comment. You'll make the next record for sure.
Okay, why is meat good?
Meat is good because apparently y'all are saying, you know, you seem to be making this radical statement, radicalism is in, you know, everything, you know, let's get against this everybody together dumb American mentality. Okay, that's what I just got out of this. Well, now the new trend is let's be a vegetarian, let's be a little hippie chick, peace, love, all this shit. Yeah, well, I mean, that's just another way of following a trend. The Lord God said, thou shalt have dominion over the animals of the earth. He didn't say, thou shalt have dominion over a big wad of tofu.
He also said the man shall have dominion over the women. So you believe that? You buy that line, too?
You got that right!
Thank you, Zero. You're on the next record already.
people are killed. Do our soldiers believe in the fascism? No, they just couldn't get a job, so they had to go and get ground up in Bush's war machine. What the fuck do the polls on TV mean? We won't give our consent to blow up foreign soil. No blood for oil. War. What is it good for? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Nothing from nothing leaves nothing. You gotta have something. You gotta have peace. January 15th, 1991. The deadline, curious George gave Saddam Hussein to evacuate troops from Kuwait. Oh yes, curious George Bush, the same curious George that vetoed the civil rights bill. Ironic enough, the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King, the drum major for peace.
War is not the answer. War is not the answer.
From the streets of New York town came black rhythm rap, funky sound. From the streets of LA town, fag rap is spreading around. You might say, what's this shit? Rapping white fags just don't fit. We're here to say that it's okay for anyone to rap black, white, or gay. I am Night of the Night. When evening comes, I spread delight. Tubbs streets, riding cars, Hollywood, backroom bars. Rock you high, rock you low. Make you feel like you never want to go. Make you moan, make you groan. Thrill your body down to the bone. Cool as ice, twice as nice. Give me the chance to put spice in your life. Rock and roll all over the place. If you feel that right in your face. Rock, rock, don't stop. Rock, rock.
Do what?
Rock, rock, don't stop. Rock, rock. Who's on top? Friend of mine's right over here. Some of you might call him queer.
We've heard it from Blow and Sugar Hill. You've heard it from the Treacherous Three. But none can match the faggot rap of Night of the Night and me. And if you want to keep your face in just one place, you'd better not call me she. Now my name is Master Bates. I'm a faggot through and through. I don't live in Boys Town or Silver Lake. But that don't mean I'm hetero. Well, I'm hetero with Levi's disco lifting weights. Alligator shirts and going on dates. Size of this, size of that. No blacks, no freaks, no femmes, no fats. Blue to me is for cars. And I won't go near West Hollywood bars. I stay away from Griffith Park. I get them just old fashioned. I do it in the dark. I never could remember for the life of me which pocket my hanky and key should be. I guess I gave up too weak. Easily. I flunked out of my course in clone free beat. Now I know I'm talking blasphemy, knocking gay culture with a capital C, but it never was my sort of scene, you see. I don't wanna be a faggot professionally.
Now the master and I are friends, you see, but sometimes we just don't agree. And all that shit he's putting down, he's just a trendy living downtown. Music's not disco, it's punk. He's just as horny, ain't no monk. Leather jacketed, looking for a lay, bouncing at the beat of the one way.
Well, that's the pot calling the kettle black. At least I do it in the sack. You need three men to have your fun. Don't you see you're afraid of just one?
Well, what you say now, some of it is true. I thought all about it, so tell me something new. Way I see it, one's as good as the other. Keep your moralistic bullshit, brother.
Most of you are white middle class. Now we're gonna preach to your ass.
If queer bashing is our faith, how about queer bashing straight?
Oh no, you'd say it shouldn't be done, because when straights bash heads, they're just having fun. But if you're wondering the point of this rap, the message is easy, you don't need no math.
When some straight mother hassles you, there's only one thing left to do.
You fight back. When your mind's on the rack and they're breaking your back, you fight back. Don't take that shit, just give them a kick, you fight back. When your mind's on the rack and they're breaking your back, you fight back. Don't take that shit, just give them a kick, you fight back.
Instead of just a fixed position, visually oriented, everything in its place, a place for everything, a classification, a job, people suddenly want to be involved in more dynamic patterns. For example, a talk show is an example of this new need or demand for involvement in dynamic situations, in which two people begin to inquire of each other in such a way that both of them can make discoveries about the other.
Now, is there a need on the part of the viewer for that?
The viewer can participate more fully in such a dialogue than he can in just listening to a packaged delivery. packaged material, whether it's in the advertising world or in the educational world, is no longer acceptable. The consumer status has been greatly downgraded. We live in a world in which the consumer habits have been yielding steadily to producer involvement. And so the TV audience acts now as a producer. Had you ever thought of the instant replay in football as creating a totally new form of audience participation in the dynamics of the game?
Well, I don't quite see how the instant replay enters into the dynamics of the game.
Well, it does. It very much concerns cliché to archetype. That's why I circled yes. around to it.
Yes, I've noticed that you say that. In fact, I think I've outlined
it. Well, yes, well, it isn't really an outline of the book. It's an outline of these themes as they appear in many situations outside. But in an instant replay, in effect, you say, let us stop this action. Halt it. Arrest.
Voice to train his body to behave in a certain way.
Mind, which I felt I really wanted to be the nucleus of the reading. In thinking about them, I realized that they had something in common. They all had some connection with sleep. They either contained dream material or were written in a state close to sleep. In fact, it was rather curious that since I am going to be dealing with a lot of dream material, I had an incident occurred to me on my way here, which was just like a dream. I've been using the 6th Avenue subway for so many years I won't mention it.
Period of imitating prom.
Men can build their own armies, fight their own wars, have mass executions, concentration camps if you please, all with androids who won't mind a bit. Just to keep us on our toes, vast entertainment networks will be organized that specialize in surprise pranks. People will get tripped. Clowns will appear out of nowhere with seltzer bottles. Some other advances. Clocks you can have put inside your head so they always know exactly what time it is.
Down the usual place and stood on the usual platform to go uptown. A young man came up to me and said, "Does this stop at 50th Street?" I said, "Oh, yes." We got on the train. The train pulled out. Then he said to me, "This train is going downtown." I said, "Downtown? That can't be. I always stand here. You know, I always stand on that platform to get the train." He says, "Well, it's going downtown." And he pointed to the sign which said Coney Island. So I said, "Well, I'll have to get out at the next stop, which may be Canal Street, and take a taxi." I got out at the next stop, and it was the station that I'd started from.
Hold it. Then you say, "Now, what has just happened in this game had this effect. Let us see how we achieve this effect. Let us replay that action and observe how this particular effect was attained." Now, this is the attitude of every artist to every artistic production. He says, in effect, "Hold that action. I want to capture it in another medium."
Are not the dynamics, let us say, of a football game, which is most of what you're talking about, confined to the field on which the game is being played?
Well, in the case of football, you have an audience without which there would be no game. What would a football game be without an audience? It would be a practice. Many of the best games ever played in America have been played in empty stadia as practice games between great teams. But because there's no public, there's no game. Now, today the name of the game has become a sort of...
There's a game, but there's no spectacle, perhaps.
No, there's no game at all without a public. Without the audience, there is no game. In a theater, if there's no audience at all, you have a rehearsal, but you don't have a play.
And processes which have been unconsciously used by every actor who was ever good in his life, even by actors who argue against the method, and yet who, insofar as they create sound and valuable results on the stage, are unconsciously using the elements which Stanislavski and other people have tried to define, and thus to put into not a set of rules, but a set of principles, of ideas, as we sometimes call it, notes for the moment when you are in difficulty, to know what to do when there is a problem. But the actor's problem has existed for all time. I mean, we actually have information about that. And the results of the actor, great actors, have found their way to these great results insofar as the blood didn't wait for John Harvey to discover that it circulated in order to start circulating. And that is the peculiar thing about the method, that on the one hand, there is nothing new in it. And if anybody thinks that it's new, then he misunderstands completely what the method is about. On the other hand, the fact that we have drawn attention to facts which hitherto were not known, were not understood, and therefore tried to suggest procedures which could help to solve these kind of problems, that in a way is new.
Mr. Strasberg, maybe to help me as much as to help anybody else, we should try.
James have an accent from day one, but he also gets excited, as you sometimes know, and really starts raising his voice and shouting and, you know. Well, later on, after lunch, I would go out, and the marketing director would die, and I would just sort of pass each other. For 2 years of this nonsense, he just didn't want to acknowledge it existed. He knew it was going on over there, or he thought he did, and he could hear it over the transom, but he just did not... It was not something that, you know, there was nothing. Prentice Hall was a rather weird organization in many ways. They had a lot of employee rules, and one of them, there was nothing in the manual for employees that said, you may not go into trance during your lunch hour and speak. It just wasn't there. So, hey, if it's not there, I'm going to go ahead and do it. So, it was a lot of fun like that. I mean, even though this guy was extremely conservative and pretty rock rid, he just, there was no way he had any weapons to fight that with, and so he just pretended it wasn't there. You know, if you saw a Stegosaurus walk by here, you'd just... unless you had a bazooka, you'd probably say, forget it, you know. what a task, you know.
Now, in the case of playback, you are in the presence of the artistic process. An artist always says, how did I get that... how could I get that effect? I must go back and replay it. So, what has happened to football since the replay is that the public now demands that the game be changed so that they can see the process by which the effects are attained. The games are even halted until the replays are completed on TV. It isn't just halted for the ads, but for the replays.
Now, I must say, Professor McLuhan, I have the impression that the replays were played on television while the team with the ball was going into a huddle and...
Yeah, but they sometimes have to wait until the replay is completed. The public sometimes bring their own sets to watch the replays during the game.
Well, I hadn't known that. They take these sets into the stadium,
yeah.
Do they?
And they use the sets in the stadium, in the lobbies and so on, eagerly during the game, too.
Quarter to one. We're eagerly anticipating the action here at the edge of the green. These are amazing athletes. They multitask. They're great putters. Some are musicians, private pilots, family men. and many skills. And we have the feeling here in the quay that something momentous is about to happen.
While you're listening, indeed, in terms of your own understanding, that you will catch between the words, between the ideas, and between the interactions, just from the very energy itself.
Evangelical Hootenanny, alligator fortune teller. She performed some magic tricks for his enjoyment, but still he refused to appear. She bought a ticket to a ball game and a ticket to a nightclub and saw double. Finally, she could stand it no longer. Finally couldn't. She jumped out in front of his board and yelled, "Turn this boat around." Now comes he. May recites this lovely poem. "I am interested in your presence, present in your absence, disturbed by your disturbance, and turbulent in your wake. I walk with a disturbed walk, but don't disturb my dance, and let's dance."
Now, this is a new form of participation in the gamer's process. Now, in our time, the public has demanded access to the artistic process in every field, including the schoolroom. The learning process is now something in which children expect to participate, not just as consumers, but as producers. And they get this from TV.
This is because of the speed up in communication, is it?
Yes, and because TV is in a par excellence way a medium of processes. It reveals processes as never before, not just products. So that you only have to watch the more effective forms of advertising to see that the ad is never presented as a product, but always as a process of participation. This is where Sesame Street has shone. Made by Madison Avenue experts, it shows the entire learning process in action.
Recommend that quite strongly, most definitely. You know, as we talk of creating your own reality and what happens with past lives and what happens with karma and what happens with cause and effect, there's also then this thing of your future, which we would suggest many are trying to scare you with. With the terribleness that is coming, you know. The doomsday, the end of the world, even Edgar Casey said, and even this one said, and that one said. And it's quite chic, as it has been, for all of your time to talk of the end times happening any day now. And that's an enrollment tactic. And just say it's quite straightforward. It's an enrollment tactic, because implicit with this, this is the terribleness that's going to happen to you. Is, but if you sign up with me, if you become follower of mine, if you do what I tell you to do, then I will save you from that. And that's been there since the time of the Bible, basically. And before that, with the doomsday, that's not just the Christians that thought of doomsday. It's not just the Judeo-Christian ethic. It existed long before that, that there were those that spoke of the end of the world is coming any moment now. And ever since that time, there have been those that have spoken of the end of the world coming any moment now. And it was supposed to end in 75 years ago with Halley's Comet, and people were scared to death then. And then those that are still alive from that experience can remember being terrified that the world was going to come to an end and the comet was going to collide and pull the Earth out of orbit, and that was going to be it. Well, now they're watching the second time it comes around, yes. And 82, with all the alignment of the planets, of all the major planets were to align and make, therefore, floods and major catastrophes, and the Earth was going to be pulled out of orbit and be destroyed in 82. And here you are. And 84 was supposed to be a terrible time where surely the world would come to an end. Oh, 79 was supposed to be a total debacle of your monetary system, with all the banks collapsing and money meaning nothing and having to exist on bartering goats or whatever. And here you are. And here you are. Oh, and it's supposed to be, well, this is supposed to be the real big one, you see. The real earthquake is now going to come. It happened in Mexico. It's going to happen in California any day now. Thank God for skeptics, you know. For all of those that are so hot to have an earthquake destroy California, thank God for the skeptics that think that's a bunch of bunk, because they're balancing out that reality very nicely. But it's so amazing, all the people, and how many of them live in California and can hardly wait. I was right, I was right, I knew it was coming. What fun, what fun. And of course, the fun is surviving it, right? That's the fun. Boy, I'm going to survive, and I'll dig my well, and I'll make my, you know, goat cheese, and I'll, you know, learn, go back to nature, and start all over again, and I'll be one of those survivors, yes? One that makes it. And there's all kinds of talk of these end times. And you're going to hear more and more of it and this sort of thing. And it's just very chic to be doing. The thing is, you create your own reality. If you want to create an earthquake to destroy you, you can do that. If you want to create a nuclear war that destroys everything, then you can do that too. You have that prerogative in your reality. That other people choose to do something else is their prerogative. We have suggested, and we mean it very clearly, that 1972 there was a major earthquake in Los Angeles. And for many, that was the one that dropped California into the ocean. And they either died, or they survived and are living in Nevada right now. And in their reality, it happened. Edgar Cayce was right. There is no more Los Angeles or Santa Barbara or San Luis Obispo or Santa Clara or San Francisco or whatever. And they are quite content in their rightness of what fun they're having wherever they are. But none of you did that because you're here. You didn't create that reality. When you have two people, you know, what about I create my own reality, you create your own reality, how can we, what if I want to win and you want to win? Then you both win. Then you both win. Two swimmers at one end of the pool, with the sound of a gun, dive in and swim to the other end, both determined to come in first, and they both do. In the one swimmer's reality, they came in first. And in their reality, the other came in second. And in the other swimmer's reality, they came in first, and the other came in second. Well, I saw it. And so therefore I know swimmer A came in first, only if you belong to the set of swimmer A winning and swimmer B losing. But if you belong to the set of swimmer B winning, then you saw it very clearly also. It's not a matter of perception, you know, eyewitness account. It's a matter of fact. You do create your own reality. And therefore, if you are determined to destroy yourself in some sort of holocaust, know that it will be your individual holocaust. And go ahead and do it if you desire it. If, however, you have some other ideas of what you might like to do with your future, know that you can make that decision also. So it is not a matter of how am I going to survive the ugliness. It's a matter of are you going to create the ugliness or not. And we would suggest you don't have to create it. We know there are thousands of people who are not going to create it. But you have your individual choice.
Viruses and bacteria. People also slip on the tiles and hit their heads on the benches. Kevin worked for a company that serviced the jacuzzis and pools of homes along the coast. A routine developed. Kevin cleaned the pools while Dave, his boss, sat in one of the deck chairs, tuned in the weather band on his shortwave radio, and listened to reports from the National Weather Service. He wanted to know what the surf would be like that day. When the surf was up, he'd go down to the beach in the afternoon with his board. Kevin vacuumed the pool with a Leafmaster, a unit that looked like a flying saucer with a net on top of it. He'd roll it along the bottom of the pool on three small casters, picking up debris, going back and forth like a lawnmower. Then he'd brush down the sides of the pool with a wide, hard-bristled brush and add the correct amount of chlorine. When he was done, the pool took on a clear, bluish hue that made it look like a painting. And it gave them a sense of real satisfaction. One of the homes they serviced, the size of a small Victorian hotel, with beautifully landscaped gardens, extended from the road and down to the beach. You entered the front door of the house and had to walk down four flights of stairs to the pool area, just above beach level. And walking down the steps, they passed a library, a recording studio, a small movie theater, a conference room, a room with monitors, keyboards, disk drives, printers, and a Xerox machine, and a combined living and dining room with a sunken area for a fireplace. Outside, there was a terrace, steps leading down to a deck, surfboards lying on a wood plank floor, and wetsuits hanging over a railing.
Harassing you or something of the sort. I mean.
So what happened? Yvonne introduced you to Alex.
Yeah, Yvonne did.
He has a story that Yvonne owed Alex some $600 and he sold you to Alex.
They both make up these stories to make each other.